Today, sharing the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Shkolim, Daf Chof Aleph. We're getting close to the end of the Masechta, and today we are learning Le'ilui Nishmas Bernard Kurtz, Dov Ben Alexander. Mez Nesham and all the Neshams we learned for heaven Aliyah. We begin towards the bottom already of Chof Aleph, Omid Aleph, with the beginning of the 8th Perek. And we begin with the Mishnah Halacha Aleph. Now, we have a little background that we need to know. There is a tumah that is attached to certain secretions that come out of a zav or a zavah or a nida. And this tumah can potentially even be an avat tumah when you're dealing with certain type of fluids that come out of them. An example of this would be the roke, the spit that comes out of a zav or a nida. Other types of tumah, for example, the urine or other secretions, wouldn't have the status necessarily of being an avat tumah, but also a capability of being metameh, Ochlin u'mashkin. So an avatoma can be metame, even Adam and Kalim. So this is a very important rule. Now, when you're in a safek situation, we go safek tuma d'araisa. So in the certain situations, even if you're not sure that this roke, this spit, comes from a zav or a nida, we have to take the position that it could be. So therefore, the Mishnah begins, kol harokin, all spittle, hanimtsoim yushalayim, that you find in Yushalayim, halachically, we give it the status of being tohar. Now, one would have said that it should have the status of being tameh, because of safek tuma d'araisa, we should go l'chumra. However, the Tikkun Charitim tells us, v'lo gazrin, and in this situation, we do not make a gzeira, that we should treat it all as being tameh. Lo gazrin and shem moshal tmei in him, that it came from azav or anida, that would be metameh odom v'kelim, and of course, ochlin u'mashkim, because here we go after the majority. Now, this doesn't mean that under other circumstances, the majority of spit that you find is going to be from Zav or Anida, but it means that it's not a minority that you have to be concerned about in our case in the Mishnah. In other situations, it's a present enough minority that we have to be concerned about it, and we go L'chumrah. But here, it's such a small minority that we can ignore it halachically, and we don't have to give it a status of being metame. That's the start of the Mishnah. These are the words, Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Yossi disagrees. Rav Yossi is more mekel. Rav Yossi Omer, Bishar Koyimos HaShana, all the rest of the year, the people that were Tomei were a larger amount, and therefore, the rest of the year, Bishar Koyimos HaShana, Shebe Emtsa, those people that walk in the middle of the road are the Tmein ones. Therefore, if you find Roke in the middle of the street, Tmein, you have to presume the worst, that it could be from Azov or Nida, and it could be Metami as an Avatuma. Shebit Stadim, but since the minority of the people that are Torah, they walk towards the side of the road, it's not in the middle of the road, to stay away from the majority of the people so they don't come into contact with their Tuma. Therefore, if you find Roke on the side of the road, Tahorin. However, during the time of the regal, when everybody's matar, because they're all bringing korbanos, so people make sure that they get rid of whatever tumah that they have, they're in a rush of desire to become tar for the regal, so now the majority of people are tar. So during the regal, during the time when the people are ola regal for the shlosh regalim, so then the opposite. The people that are tar walk in the middle of the road, and therefore, sheba emtsa, if you find roke, if you find spit in the middle of the road, tahorin, we don't treat that as tameh, we treat that as tar. Shebet stadim, but since the minority of the people that weren't able to cleanse themselves from whatever ritual tumor that they had, they just got it, for example, so they walk on the side of the road to stay away from the other people. Shebet stadim tameh, so therefore, if you find roke on the side of the road during the shlosh regalim period of time, that rogue is tameh. Why? Because in this situation, as I just pointed out, the minority of the people that are tameh, they'll go to the side. Now we have another din that we have to know, that when you find kalim, normally you have to assume that if you don't know the status of this utensil, that might be tameh. Again, we are very concerned with tumah and tara, so if you have a kalim that you don't know for certain is tar, so then the presumption is, the Mishnah Taharas tells us that we have to presume that it is tameh. So how does it impact around Yushalayim and the Shlosh Regalim? So the Mishnah tells us, call a keli on Mitzrayim Yushalayim, if you find a keli in Yushalayim, so it depends. Derech Yerido Lebeis HaTvila Tmein. If you find it on the way down to the mikvah, they used to have a path going to the mikvah, and then the people leaving the mikvah would go in a different path from the mikvah, so they shouldn't come into contact with the people coming into the mikvah. So therefore, the Mishnah is telling us, if you find kalim on the way to the mikvah, so a person dropped it, mistama, he dropped it because it was tamei, and he was bringing it to the mikvah. So kalim that you find on the path to the mikvah are considered tamei, and you have to presume the worst. However, v'derech aliyah, if you find kalim on the way that leaves the mikvah, so mistama, any kelim that you find there had just been immersed, and they're tahorin. And that's what the Mishnah tells us, with derech aliyah tahorin. Shelo kiridason aliyason, because they had different paths to go down to the mikvah, when you left the mikvah, there were two different routes, not the same in and out. It's not a two-way traffic. You had one-way traffic going to the mikvah on route number one, and then the people would all leave the mikvah on route number two. So if you find it on route number one going to the mikvah, it's going to be presumptively tameh. If you find it on route number two leaving the mikvah, it's going to be presumptively tar. This is the opinion of Meir. Again, Rav Yossi has a more makel opinion. Rav Yossi Omer, kulon tahorin. He says, no, in Yerushalayim, the rabbis will not gozer that there should be tumah. As the Tikkun Chazan says, lo gozer al sofek ha-kelim should be Yerushalayim. The rabbis never will gozer in this situation that these kelim should have a presumptive status of being tameh. However, there was one exception to this rule. Chutz min hasal v'hamagrefa v'hamaritza. Except for these types of utensils, we will explain a little bit more about what some of them are, but basically the sal was a basket there where they would collect the bones of the mace. They would sometimes move a mace from one place to another place. They had difficulty finding burial spots in Eretz Yisrael, so they would sometimes allow the body to decay, and then they would just be malakate the bones. They would take the bones and bring them to the ancestral family burial area where it could take up much less space. So this sal, this basket, they would collect the bones. I'm a gray foot. The Tikkun Charetin and the Korban Eidah both tell us that this is a kli shemekapsibo atzomos amesim. This is how the kli that you actually go and collect those bones to put them into the sal. And then you have something called maritza. A maritza is a certain type of utensil that would break up the bones. And all of these utensils were specifically used for tumma activities. In other words, they all had a higher, much higher likelihood of them being actually tumme mace. And therefore, if you find these utensils, the rabbis did institute a presumptive status of being tumme, as opposed to all the other utensils in Yerushalayim. Rav Yossi is mekel and says they don't have a presumptive status of being tummy. Now the Mishnah quotes a Mishnah that we just had in Pesachim not that long ago. It's reiterated over here because we're dealing with tummy utensils, so it tells us the following din. Sakin shenimtzos, if you find the knife, the arbosar, on your dalet, Erev Pesach. Now, they needed knives, obviously, to shecht the tremendous number of carbon Pesachs that they had. So the question was this sakin tahar, or was the sakin not tahar? They didn't have a plethora of sakin, and now they found the sakin. They needed an extra sakin. So what was its status? If it was tameh, so they couldn't use it to shecht the Korban Pesach. If it was presumed to be tahar, they could use it to shecht the Korban Pesach. So if you find this knife on a regular year where your dalet is a weekday, so then shochet b'miyad, you can assume that the person who had lost this had actually immersed it on Yud Gimel, so it would be ready. You need Harav Shemesh, you immerse it on Yud Gimel, then it has Harav Shemesh, nightfall, it becomes tahar. It can be used to go and shecht kachim. So you don't shecht at night, so during the daytime, they would shecht on your dalet. So if he dropped the knife, one can presume that it definitely was tar. Shochit b'miyad. You can use it to go shecht the Korban Pesach, and the chagigas your dalet, with no problem, you can assume that it is tar. However, if you find it bishloshosor, if you find it on Erev Pesach, so then maybe the person still had time till it would be nightfall before he would go put it in the mikvah. He has to put it in the mikvah before nightfall, but lav dafka needs to do it at 8 o'clock in the morning. He can do it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So if you find it on the 13th, you don't know, did this person immerse it already, and then it just needs Harav Shemesh, or did it not get immersed? So on the 13th, you have to take the path that it is presumptively tame still, and shone, you have to go and repeat going and putting it in the mikvah, because maybe it went in the mikvah, umatfil. You have to go and be tovel it again in the mikvah. Now, if you find a kupitz is also something that you could technically shecht with, but it usually was used to break up bones. It is more of a implement that's used in a grosser type of cutting rather than the fine cutting of a knife that you use for shechita. So if you find this kupitz, which would not be able to be used, obviously, on the Korban Pesach, because the Korban Pesach is etzem lo sish berubo, so therefore this kupitz wouldn't be used for the Korban Pesach. So it would only be used for the chagiga that would be brought on tesvav. Now, you'll ask, why not the chagiga that is brought on your dalet? So the Gemara in Pesachim explained that we're dealing here where the nasi was nebuch goses, and therefore there was a high presumption that he would be nebuch dying, and everybody would be metame to the nasi. And in this situation, you wouldn't be bringing a chagigas yudale, because you're only allowed to bring, when you're tame, in this situation where the Rov Tzibur is Tameh, you can only bring a Korban Pesach, but you can't bring the Chagigas Yedalet. So we're dealing here with a situation where you wouldn't have a Chagigas Yedalet. So the only reason you'd use these Kupits would be for the regular Chagigah, which is brought on the first day of Yontif. So if you find this Kupits on either Yud Gimel or Yedalet, Bazeh, so then there has to be a presumption that he hasn't yet brought it to the mikvah, because he still has plenty of time. He says, on your dalet, I'll bring it right before the shkia, on your dalet, I'll go to the mikvah, he'll have Arab Shemesh, and be perfectly good for tesvab, because you don't need it on your dalet. Or the likelihood they felt was that you wouldn't necessarily need it on your dalet, because even for the chagigas yudalet, they weren't sure if they were going to bring it or not, so therefore there was no rush to be tovo their kupits. And therefore, in this situation as well, when you find the kupits on either your gimel or your dalet, shoni, you have to go again, umatil, and be tovo again. If it wasn't tovo the first time, so you've tovo it now for the first time, but even if it was previously tovo, you don't know that, so you have to be tovo it, quote, again. Now, this is when you have your dalet is a regular weekday. But let's say like a year like this year, where your dalet was Erev Pesach Shecholios B'Shabbos, your dalet is Shabbos, Chol Arba'os Sholios B'Shabbos. In this situation, if you find the kupitz, so obviously the kupitz wouldn't be used on your dalet, because your dalet is Shabbos, and you don't go and shecht on Shabbos, a chagigas your dalet for sure. So then, here, if you find the kupitz, it obviously must have been prepared to be ready for the next day, which would be Tezvav, because on Shabbos you're not going to be using this, so they must have already prepared it, certainly on Friday. So therefore, it had Harav Shemesh on Friday night, and now when you find it on Yudalit, Chol Abosol Yos B'Shabbos, if you find this meat cleaver, this kupitz on Shabbos, Shochi B'Miyad, then you're allowed to go and use this immediately. You can presume that it's tar, shochit bo miyad. You could use it immediately. Obviously, you're not going to go and break the bones of the Korban Pesach, but if you needed it to shach the Korban Pesach, and certainly if you needed it for the Chagiga on Tesvav, you can use this, because you don't have to go re-immerse it again, because you could presume that the owner had immersed it on Yud Gimel, and it had Harav Shemesh, and therefore on Shabbos it definitely is usable, and certainly on Sunday, on the first day of Yontif, it definitely is usable without having to be re-immersed. Similarly, return to Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, B'chamisha, so if you found this kupitz on Tesvav, so then, Shochi B'miyad, you certainly can use that immediately as well, because it definitely had been immersed before Yontif in your hair of Shemesh, no problem. Then the Mishnah tells us, Nimtso Kishur L'Sakin. What happens if you find the Sakin and the kupitz connected together? They were tied together in some way. So then, we treat the kupitz, Harehu Kisakin. We presume that nobody would have tied them together unless they both were tar. And therefore, in this situation, the Mishnah tells us the kupitz has the same din as the sakin. And even on a weekday, if you were to find it, you can assume that it had already been immersed so that it was ready to be used on your dalet. And therefore, even the kupitz in this situation could be used on your dalet. Okay, that's our Mishnah. Now we start the Gemara. Rabbi Ovin B'Shem Rav Shur ben Levi said, how come we say that if you find spit any place in Yerushalayim, it's tar, with the one exception being in this certain area, in the upper marketplace? Chutz Mishal Shuka Elyon. That was the opinion of Rav Meir, Divri Rav Meir. Why? What was unique, according to Rav Meir, about this Shuka Elyon, that there they were Tomei, the spit, but every place else the spit was not considered Tomei? So Rav Ovin B'Shem, Rav Shur ben Levi tells us, because that area in the Shuka Elyon, Katsron, another gear, so we have is Zovin, and some substantiate this girsa, but it's much easier to read this as Katzron Shel Nochrim Hayasham. This was an area. Katzron is a place where they would go and clean clothing. That was a laundromat. And therefore, the Goyim had a concession up there. They had a laundromat up there. And therefore, the spit that you would find over there, Mistoma, was not Tahar. It didn't come from people that were Tahar. It came from a Nochri. And therefore, you have to presume in that situation that the Tumah that Chazal gave to the spit of a Nochri is still applicable, and that's why if you find spit up there, you have to take the position that it is mistama, came from a nochri, and therefore it is tameh. That's teretz number one. Amar Rechanina, Rechanina tells us, no, arodos hayu nochrin. Now we have the girsa of Yerushalayim, but the more correct girsa should be sham. That's what the gra changes around in Gosa gra Aleph. He says, Amar Rechanina, arodos hayu nochrin sham. And then he continues, we can keep the gears for the rest of the way anymore, it's not that different, but he says that there's a Maisa Shahaya to show that this is true. So they used to go and kill donkeys up there. The Gemara elsewhere tells us in Menachos that they needed to keep their lions fed. They had lions that used to use for all sorts of barbaric purposes. So in any event, used to feed them these donkeys. These arodos were very strong, big donkeys, and they used to kill them. The nochri means to literally spear them, and they would feed them to the donkeys. And that's why there was a lot of blood up there, but there were a lot of goyim up there. So these people were presumptively, the spit that you found it presumptively came from these people, from these nochri. And now, the Gears of the Groys, Maisa, he tells us the following story. The Gears that we have is Amar Yeshua ben Levi. Maisa, hayu nochrin arodos v'yisratya shomelech, that they used to go and kill these donkeys, these wild donkeys, in the barracks of the king, and this yisratya shomelech, and vahayu ole regalim, and the people that would be ole regal, mishtakim b'dam arakav osein. There was so much blood from these donkeys that they killed for their lions, so they had to wade through this area up to their knees in the blood of all these donkeys. And the people came to the chachamim and said, we came into contact over here with the blood of these donkeys, are we tameh or not, from the nevela? If you come into contact with the nevela basar, so then you become tameh. But what about the blood of the nevela? So they asked the shayla, the lo amar lahem davar, and the chachamim said, no, there's no problem. In other words, they didn't say that there's any tumah attached to the blood of nevela. So this is the first opinion that we have over here, that there is no blood tumah attached to the blood of a nevela. Now, we have the next sentence in parentheses. It's really unclear why it's here. It's probably just a printer's error, because it almost repeats what we just said a moment ago without adding anything to it. So we're not goris, so Rishimon Baraba, B'Shem Rabbi Chanina, Katzer Shonochem HaYasham. And we just had that before. In any event, both the Tikkun Chalitin and the Korban Eidin now say the next piece is a reiteration of what we had earlier in the third parak, and all of this is really found over there in Halacha Beis, in the second mission over there, and their commentaries, which I'll say over here now, are really found over there and not over here in our Gemara. So it tells us, Rabbi Simon B'Shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, since we just had this maisa with the arodos and the blood of the arodos, so now we go and discuss a little bit more what is the status of the dam of a nevela. So Rabbi Simon said in the name of Shur ben Levi, Maisa befirda Mishal Beis Rabbi Shemesa. One time there was a donkey that belonged to the house of Rabbi, and it died. And the Chazal there, Paskin, the postek for the house of Rabbi, said, the Tiru as Domea Mishum Nevela, said that this blood was not Metame as the blood of a Nevela, as opposed to the meat of the Nevela would be Metame. Now, what was that actual din that Rabbi Simon said? So Rabbi Lazar asked him, Rabbi Lazar Shol, Rabbi Simon, this psak halacha, was it an absolute psak halacha that the blood is not matame at all, or at kama? Or was there a minimal amount of blood that's not matame, but when you reach a significant amount of blood, the size of a revias, then it is matame? That was the question that Rabbi Lazar asked to Rabbi Simon. What psak did you say over in the name of Shuvan Levi? Lo agive, but Rabbi Simon didn't give him an answer. So he went to go and ask, Rabbi Lazar went to go and ask the source of the halacha, Rishu ben Levi, Shaul Rishu ben Levi. And Rishu ben Levi told him, Amalei, that the paskin in the house of Rebbe, the posek for the house of Rebbe, said, Ad revius, if you have less than revius worth of blood, so then you come into contact with it, you're still tar. However, Yoser Mikain, if you have more than a revius of blood, tummy, then you do become tummy. So in other words, Rishu ben Levi had explained what this shita was. And Rabbi Simon did not bother to tell that to Rabbi Elazar. He was upset. Ubash l'Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar was upset that the lo chazal l'Rabbi Simon shemu asra. That why didn't Rabbi Elazar? He was upset. He said, why didn't Rabbi Simon tell me that this is the full statement? Because we left it a little bit hanging. I don't know if dam nevela is not matame at all, or it's only not matame if you're less than the shear. The Gemara continues and says, Rabbi have a Yosef Masne Hodein Uvda. Rabbi said this over, this psak halacha that Rabbi Shuban Levi had said, that the blood is not metame. And again, a similar question was asked him. Amalei Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna to Rabbi ad kama. How much over here was this din, was it not metame at all? It was only metame if it was less than the shear of a revius. But it is metame if it's more than the shear of a revius. Ad kama. Now, we're not going to the words Armalay. This is, in fact, a continuation of his question. Do we say ad kama, ad revius tahar, but yoser mikan tome, or not? Is it that there is no tumah at all? Ubat bay. Now, Rabibi didn't give him an answer. That's what Ubat bay. Some say he gave him a zetz. The Karmen Eda there said, dochaf oso besandlo. He didn't give him an answer, he just gave him a zetz. Others say that he glowered at him. In any event, he didn't tell him the answer. So Rav Bibi didn't give him an answer, and Rav Yitzchak Bar Bisna was upset. So Amalei Reb Zrika. So Reb Zrika said to Rabibi, why didn't you give the poor guy an answer? Begin to have a shaloch ad boy bay. Because he asked you a question, you give him a zetz, you don't answer him, you glower at him. So Amalei Rabibi said, I'm sorry, please, my bad. I didn't realize that he was really asking me this question because I was upset about something. Begin to lohavis dati be. I didn't have my mind with me at that time. I was not fully thinking. I was preoccupied. What was he preoccupied about? With Parnosa. The Amar Rabbi Chanan, because Rabbi Chanan said, the Pasuk tells us, the Pasuk says in the Tochacha that you're going to have your life held in your hands over here, that you're going to not have enough food. So this person that's worried about his life, this is a person that doesn't own land, but he has enough money, he buys food for the year, but what's going to be for next year? He doesn't have land, he doesn't know if he'll have food for next year. So he has a certain amount of worry and concern. Your life is hanging in the balance. Then it says, there will be other people that will be afraid day and night. What is that? This is a person that doesn't have a lot of money, but he has enough money to buy for a couple of days worth of food. So he says, okay, I'm good for a couple of days. What's going to be next week? I don't have land. I don't have money. How am I going to support myself next week? So he's very nervous. Day and night, he's afraid about it. Then you have a person even in a worse situation. There's a person that won't even be sure that he's going to be alive. This guy that doesn't have grain, he doesn't have anything. He goes and buys a single loaf of bread, buys a single bagel from the baker. When he's done with that, he has nothing else. So he really is lo samim chayach. He doesn't know how he's going to live. And therefore, Rabbi said, Vano, I myself, somich apaltera, I am that type of a person that has lo samim b'chayecha concerns about his parnasa. I have nothing. I just had one loaf of bread. What am I going to eat for supper? What am I going to eat the next day? So therefore, I was preoccupied, and therefore, forgive me for not answering Rav Yitzchok Bar Bizna. It wasn't because I was upset with him. It was because I was preoccupied. Now the Gemara says, "No, what's the halacha? My kedon is the blood of a nevela matame with the shear of a revius, but not less than a revius, or is it not matame at all?" So, hey, Rav Yeshua ben Pesora, that's the gersa that we have. The Gemara in the Bavli tells us this is Rav Yeshua ben Pesora, who said, "Al dam nevela shu tar." He said it's totally tar, even more than a revius is tar. Now, the Gemara questions this. Mau tar. Are you telling me that that's what it means? Yeshua ben Pesora is telling us that it's totally tar? Really? He meant, no, tar milahakshah. He says that this type of blood is not capable of making something mukshal kabel tumah. So it can't be machshir something to accept tumah. It is not the type of blood that has the ability to do that. We always talk about the seven liquids. We mentioned this many times. Yad, shachat, dam. And the dalit in the mnemonic stands, one of them for dam, the other one is for Dvash, and these liquids are capable of making something machshel kabel tumah. However, this dam is only a certain type of dam, but not the dam of a nevela. So therefore, he says it's tor milahachshir. However, holy tamos metame, but it itself is capable of being metame something else if it has a shear of revius. So how can you tell me that it means tar, totally tar? That's wrong. So Gemara says no. Tamon tanina, we learned over there in machshirin, in the Mishnah, in machshirin, Dam Hasheretz, now we delete the word metame, it's correct, but we're going to say it in a moment. Dam Hasheretz ki b'saro metame, that the dam of a sheretz is metame, just like the basar of a sheretz is metame. However, ve'eno machshir, but it's not making something able to be mukshal kabel tuma. And then that Mishnah machshirin says, ve'ein lono kayotzi bo, there is nothing else. Now on the surface, they're saying there's nothing else that is not machshir. No other blood is not machshir, something to be mekabel tumah. So therefore, the blood of other creatures, such as a nevela, is not like the basar, and therefore is not capable of being metame at all. So how can you tell me that it meant that it's Torah milahachshir, ha litamos metame? You see clearly that the Mishnah Machshirin says that this is the exception to the rule. This is the only blood that's like the basar, and all other blood is not like basar, and all other blood is not mitame. So how can you tell me that this means that it is able to be mitame? The Mishnah Machshirin clearly says no. Gemara says, no, you're misunderstanding. When it says, ve'ein lono kayotzi, but when it says that there is nothing else that's like this, it means kishior tumaso. It means that there is no other animal or creature that the basar and the dam have the same shear. Because this is unique to sheretz. Sheretz is metame bechadasha. So its dam is also metame. The boss of a sheriff is metame chadasha. The dam is also metame chadasha. That's what it means when it says vein lono chayotzi bo, where the two shirim are the same. However, the dam of a nevela, while it doesn't go and transmit in the same shir as the boss of the nevela, because the boss of Nevela is a Kizayis, and the Dam is a Revius, so therefore they have different Shiurim. Avol Domo Metame Kivsaro. But the din that the Dam is Metame, that is true. Just like the boss is Metame, the Dam of Nevela is Metame, albeit the Shiurim are different. And therefore, this answer that Rav Yeshua ben Maseri gave, that it's not Metame at all, Ma'u Tar, you're telling me that it means it's totally Tar, is incorrect. How do we paskin? So Amar Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says, "Pligi bo train amaroyim." We have a machlokas amaroyim as to how we paskin. Is the dam tar totally, or is the dam only tar if it's up to revius? But more than revius, it's metame. So Chad Amar Tomei, one of these two amaroyim, we don't know who it was, said that it is metame by the shear of revius. The Chad Amar Tar. The other one says no. Like Rav Yeshua ben Maseri, the first opinion that we had, that it is not metame at all. Mandi Amar Tomei Rav Yehuda. The one who says it's Tomei, that goes like the Tana Rav Yehuda that we have in Edios, where it says that it is Matame. Umanda Amar Tar, the one who says that no, it's Tar, that goes like the opinion that we just brought down, Rav Yeshua ben Besor, Rav Yeshua ben Maseira, that says that it's totally Tar. Amalei Rav Avduma, the min Nechusa, Rav Avduma, who came from a city known as Nechusa, he said to Rav Yossi, Vios, this is 100% correct that you just said that Rav Yehuda says, the Tana Rav Yehuda in Edios says that it is Matami with the Shira Revius, and I'll show you that that's right, because the Rav Yehuda, he is the posek Moriyana, the Bein Nesiyahava. He was the posek for the house of the Nasi. He was the posek for Rebbe's house. So therefore, it makes sense that he would be the one to say, as Rabbi Simon brought down in Rishu Milevi, that the psak there was only if it's less than Revius is a tar, but if it's more than Revius, it's Tame. Oh, that goes Lishitaso, like Rabbi Yehuda. Then we said in the Mishnah, Kol Arokin v'chule. We said that if you find spit any place in Yerushalayim, except in the Shukah Elyon, you can presume it is tar. Gemara says, Lo kenama Rabbi Yavo b'shem Rabbi Yosef b'chanina. Didn't Rabbi Yavo say in the name of Yosef b'chanina, Lo gozer al Arokin shem Yerushalayim? They didn't gozer any tumah on Rok. So why were they gozer in the Shukah Elyon? So Gemara says the answer we already gave before. Again, I'm not sure why this was worked out. Mustama, he didn't hear this discussion from before. Ha'id Maraleh, because we already said, Rabbi Yavin, Mishem, Rishu, Belevi, Katsu, Shonachem, Ayasham. That's because there were Goyim over there. That was the first teretz that we gave. The second teretz were the Arudos, but it's the same teretz that there were Goyim over there. And therefore, the Goyim, we do have to be concerned that there, if the majority of the people there were Goyim, or a significant number of people were the Goyim, that any spit that you found came from somebody who wasn't being Matar for the Regal. The Goyim weren't Matar for the Regal. And therefore, any spit that you find over there has to be have the presumptive status of being tummy. Now the Gemara says in the following brisa, B'shayi Mosa Shano, all the rest of the year, Hatmei Mahalchin Shibolus. We said this in our Mishnah as well, and here the brisa expands on it. And I'll give you the girsa that we use through the Vilna Gaon. That's, he makes a number of changes over here, so we'll just follow straight the gears from the Vilna Gaon, and I'll point out where we change the gears. So Atmei Mahalchin Shibolas. Shibolas means literally Be'emtza. That's what the Korban Eidah says, Hainu Be'emtza. So they would walk in the middle of the street, the people who Tamei, because they were the larger group of people. But Tahori Mahalchin Etzad, the rest of the year, the smaller number of people that were Tar would walk on the side of the road to stay away from the people in the middle. And the gears that we have is Vatahorim, but it should be Vatmein, Mahalchin Stam. The Tmein wouldn't say anything. They were Tame, and they were the majority, so it didn't make sense for them to say anything. And the minority, the gears that we have is Vatmein, but it really should be Vatahorim, the minority, Ormel and Perusha. They would tell the others, stay away from us, because you're Tame, and we're Tar. However, Bishas Arego, when things were reversed, everybody tried to become Tar for the Rego, so they could eat their Karbonos. So Hatahorim Mahalchim Shibolos, the people that were Tar now walked in the middle of the road, they needed more room. But Tmeim, the smaller number of Tmeim, Mahalchim Yitzad, they walked on the side. And we flip it around now. Instead of the Girsa being Hatmeim, it's Vahatorin Mahalchim Stam. The people that were Tar didn't say anything. And the Girsa that we have is Hatorim, it should be Vatmeim. If you walk on the side, Arm Lam Perusha, stay away from us because we don't want to make you Tame. Then we said in the Mishnah, if you find Kalim, so it depends where you find them. If it's on the road to the mikvah, so then you have to presume that they were dropped going to the mikvah in the tummy. But if it's on the road leaving the mikvah, so then you have the right to presume that they were immersed in the mikvah and now a tar. Again, the word says, Lo kenam Rabbi Yavo b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, Lo gozer ala kelim shibishlayim. Wait a second. I thought in Yerushalayim we weren't gozer tumah. So how come they were gozer tumah on the kelim that they found on the way to the mikvah? And the word gives the obvious answer. Mikvah shenimtzu derech yirida lebeis ha'tvila. Nasu Hochiach. He says that's presumptive evidence where they found them. They weren't gozer in general. But if they're on the way to the mikveh, so then certainly one has to be concerned that the person was going to immerse these Tamei Kelim in the mikveh when he dropped it. So therefore, if you find it on the way to the mikveh, has a higher sense, a higher likelihood. Nasu Hochiach. It's like a proof that they're Tamei, and therefore you have to presume that they are Tamei. Then we said in the Mishnah that there were certain exceptions to this rule. We said you had the Sal, you had the Magrefa, and you had the Maritza. Again, the Sal was the basket, the Magrefa was the one that you gathered the bones into this basket, and then you had this Maritza, which we didn't translate fully. So the Gemara here says, Abishol Yakari Osan, he would call this Maritza Tziporin. He would call it like a fingernail. So the Tikhon Chaditin tells us that Abishol was a person who dug graves, so Yakover Mason, and this is Kedemrin and Perakimu Denida. V'haya Ragil B'Kalim. He was the guy that was very familiar with these Kalim of the grave diggers. V'haya Kariya son Tziporin. And he was the one that called it Tziporin. This Magrefa, he called it Tziporin. Tikkun Chadad says it's not the Maritza that is called the Tziporin. He says it's the Magrefa of the Mishnah that he calls it Tziporin. He called it this Tziporin because the carbonator says it's Domeh. Kidmus Tziporin Shel Adam. It looks a little bit like a finger of a person in the shape of this utensil. Others say, no, that this Maritza is what they call the Tziporin. In any event, the Gemara says, Mandi Amat Tziporin, according to Abba Shaul, who called it Tziporin, Shoya Domel Tziporin, because it looked like a finger in the way that it was shaped. Mandi Amat Maritza, however, the one that called this a Maritza, Shemaritza Eso Evan LeBesek Forest, because they would use this to go and break the stones, crumble the stones that they would find while they were digging a grave, so they would have to get rid of the stones, so they would go and use this implement to crush it and turn it into little small pieces which wouldn't interfere with the burial. Now, the Tikkun Chaditin brings down the gears from the Rambam, Shimaritzo Esa Etzem, not that it would go and crumble the stones, but it would go and crumble the bones. Pirish, Dorikomar, Shoyo Kli, Shoyo Mechasasin, Umaratsin Bohat Somos, Kadeshi Chansu Besal. It would allow them to break the bones up and put them into the basket, so they could take it from one burial place to another burial place. So again, we have a machlokis as to what exactly you were breaking up over here, either the stones or the actual bones. Then the Mishnah said, Kupitz v'chule, we said that if you find this Kupitz, so bein zeh, well, you found it on the 13th or the 14th day of Nisan in a regular year, so you weren't allowed to go and use it. But if it was tied to a sakin, so then it has the same status as a sakin. But the Braisa says the opposite. Tani, we learned in the Braisa, no, ha-sakin shurullah, if you find the Kupitz and the sakin tied together, harei zu kemosah, then the sakin takes the status of the Kupitz, and it can't, in fact, be used. You have to go and be tovel it again before you can go and use it. That is the first explanation that the Korbanader had. However, he then says, the Yosin Nirali, it makes more sense to me to say, the Braisa leperushe lemasnis and kosi. Not that the Braisa is arguing with the Mishnah, but the Braisa is coming to enhance or further add on to the Mishnah, the Hachikamah, and this is where you have to explain it. The Braisa is telling us, nimtza sakin stoma kishura im sakin acheres yedua. If you have a unknown status knife that's put together with the status of a knife that is known, either it's known to be tar or it's known to be tame. So then, hareyu kisakin yedua. So then we treat this unknown knife the same exact halachic status as the known knife. So im tmeya, if the known knife was tmeya, then we take the unknown knife that's attached to it and say it's also tmeya. Vim tahora, if the known knife is tahora, so then we say the unknown knife is also tahora. And he says this is the pirush of the Rambam and the pirush of Mishnayis as well, and this is what his preferred pshat is. Now we go to the next Mishnah, Halacha Beis. The Mishnah begins, Paroches Shenitneis Bivlat HaTumah. Now there was a paroches inside the Beis HaMikdash. It separated the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodoshim. In the first Beis HaMikdash, there's the wall. In the second Beis HaMikdash, you have the area between the two separated with a paroches, not with a wall, because the structure of the building was larger and a wall would not have been feasible. This paroches was capable of being makabel tuma, it was a utensil, it was a kli. And therefore, parochas shenitmeis bevlada tuma, if the parochas became tuma with a vlada tuma, so a vlada tuma is normally a rishon, and if it comes into contact with a keli, it normally doesn't have the ability to be metamiyat. So here we're talking about, Tikkun Chaditin explains that we're dealing with a liquid that was a vlada tuma, a liquid that is a vlada tuma can be metame as a rishon, and is matame even kalim. So that's the Tikkun Chatzitz explanation for what we're dealing with over here. So this parochus became tame via contact with the liquid that was a rishon. So in this situation, matbilin also b'fnim. You have to go and be tovel the parochus, but you don't have to make it leave the azara. You can leave it inside the azara and be tovel it directly in the azara. It's Hashem, we're going to be learning Yuma soon. It's going to tell us where in the Azara there actually was a mikvah, with the Kohanim to go be metavel, as well as now the parochas could be toveled in that mikvah. Alternatively, if you took it outside of the Azara, there's no prohibition in bringing it outside the Azara, then when you tovel in the mikvah outside the Azara, you can go put it back inside the Azara immediately. You don't have to have any waiting period of time. However, if the parochas became tummy with an avatumma, so this is real tumma d'araisa, you have to remove the parochas from inside the azar, you have to take it outside, and in this situation, you tovel in the mikveh outside, and then you have to go and put it out to dry inside the chel. The chel, remember, was an area we said that was outside of the azara. It was, according to many, all the way surrounded the entire Azara. We had discussed it earlier in the Masechta when we talked about the 13 breaches, the 13 pirzos that were made in the Soreg that surrounded the Chel. In any event, so they would go and stretch out the parochas to dry in this Chel area, and because they couldn't bring it right back inside, so they let it dry off over there because it required Harav Shemesh, in order to be able to be used again inside the Azara, to be lose its tumah status and to be brought inside the Azara. It's like a tvul yom during this period of time. As an aside, when they would make a new parochas, in Maisa Chadasha, now we're not dealing here with tumah anymore, but they would go and tovel every new parochas, even if there was no knowledge of it being tameh, and they would go and show it to all the people and then have it put out, shotchenosa agava itzdaba, they would put it out on a large platform or a bench that they had in the Har HaBayis area. And the purpose of this was to let it dry out, but also Kadesh Shira on Esmalachta, to show everybody the beauty of the work. She knew it was very, very beautiful. Now the Mishnah tells us, how do they actually make the parochas? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Askan, Shimon Gamliel said the name of the Askan Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Shimon, and he said, parochas ovya tefach, the thickness of the parochas was a tefach. Tefach again is about 3.5-4 inches, 4 thumbs put together. Al shivim ushtayim nimim neregis, and it was made, it was woven from 72 threads. Each of these was like a layer in the structure of the parochas. And al konim of nimim, each one of these layers, esim yabarchutim, it was made up individually of 24 threads. So it was again a very thick parochas. How big was it? Orka Arboim Amma, Virachba Esim, it was 40 by 20, its length was 40 and its width was 20 amma. Umishmonim Ushtayim Ribo Haisanasis. Now the understanding of this in the Girsa that we have, it was made up of 82 10,000s, and the Tikkun Chatzitz says that this was golden dinarim. Others explain, however, and this is really based upon a Rashi in the Gemara in Chulin, that says that the word isn't over here, is not Rebo with an Aleph, but it's Revos, which means young women. So there were 82 women that were involved in making this parochas. Ushtayim osim b'chol shana. They replaced this, they made 2 every year. They got worn out, and they replaced them, and they made 2 every year. And it took Ushlosh Meos Kohanim at Bilon Osa. The Gemara will explain this as a guzma, but it took 300 Kohanim to go and immerse this huge parochas. The Gemara will discuss this more. Now we start off. Gemara says, if in fact the Torah said ilu amar chut, it said that the parochas had been made of a chut, that would imply that it was a single thread echad. But it says kaful, and therefore it means that it was shtayim, 2 interwoven together. But that's not all it said. It also said it's shazur, which means that it's shlosha, l'shlosha, that they're 3. And then it said moshzor, which doubles, and therefore it makes it 6. So therefore, each one of these threads was 6 threads together, and there were 4 of them, because it says that the parochas were made of Tchelis, Argomon, Tola, Shoni, and Sheish. So there were these 4 different threads or materials, each one of which was made up of 6. So Mikan, Ha'esim V'Yarbor. That's what we get, that each one was made up of 24 threads. That's what the Mishnah said, Al-Kolnima V'Nima, Esim V'Yarbor Chutim. That is the explanation of our Mishnah. But not everybody agrees. There are those that say it was even thicker. Tani, we learned in the Braisa that it was made up of 32 threads, Shloshim Ushtayim. How did they get that number? So Gemara says, Ilu Amar Chut, if we just said Chut, so that would be Echot. Kafur, that would be Shtaim. Shazur, that would be here. Arba, it doubles it, not just adding on one more. And then Moshazor doubles that, Lushmona. So again, we have 8 threads for each one. Again, there were 4. The Tchelis are gone, Tola, Shani, and Sheish. So that's 4 times 8. So Mikan, Hotlosin, Utrain. You get 32. There's one that says it's even thicker, Tana. Arba Mishmona, it was 48. How does he get that? So again, if it had just said Ilo Mechut, that would be 1. But it says Kofu, that means Shtaim. And then it says Kalia as well. That tells us Shlosha. Now, then it says Shazor, so you double that, Lashisha. And then it says Moshazor, you double that to 12. So each individual Nima was made up of 12, since there are 4 of them. Again, Chelis, Agamon, Tolash, Shani, and Sheish. So therefore, it's 4 times 12, which is 48. Mekan, Ha, Arboim, Utamnaya. Nadigmar says, one pasuk tells us, "Kosev Echad Omer," that it was made of Maasei Rokem, that the Prochus was made out of Maasei Rokem, a certain type of embroidery. And then another pasuk says, "Kosev Echad Omer," it was made out of Maasei Choshev. A Choshev is a person who thinks. It was made and designed in a certain way. So what's the difference between Maasei Choshev and Maasei Rokem? So Gemara says, Maasei Rokem means parts of Echad. It means that it had a single side. Only one side had the design in it. Whereas Maasei Choshev means Shtei Partzufus. It had 2 designs in it. What does this mean? So we have two different opinions over here, machlokas, as to what one face or one side versus 2 faces, 2 sides. This is a machlokas review of the Rebbe Nechemia. Chadamar, we don't know which one said which. One of them said that Maasei Rokem, it means. Now the girsa that we have is changed by the Vilna Gaon, and therefore we'll follow the Vilna Gaon's the Hagos Hagro sheet over here. And we have that when it says Rokem, when it's one face, it means Ari Mikan, and the Gersa we have is Ari Mikan, but that doesn't make any sense. It should be V'cholok Mikan. So one side had a face of a lion on it, the other side did not have a face on it. There was nothing embroidered into it. That's Maasei Rokem. Maasei Choshev, again, the Gersa we have is Ari Mikan, V'cholok Mikan, that there's nothing on the other side that doesn't make any sense. So here, it's the 2 faces, Ari Mikan, V'Ari Mikan. So this is the Machlokas in Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemia. One of them says that Rokem means there's a face, Ari, on one side and nothing on the other side, and then Maasei Choshev means there's a face on each side. That's one opinion. Then the other opinion, the Charana, we don't know, again, this is Rehud of Nechemia, the other one said, Maasei Rokem means Ari Mikan, again, we delete the word V'cholok, V'Ari Mikan. He says that the Maasei Rokem has a lion on each side. And then the Maasei Choshev is when you have different pictures on each side, Ari Mikan, V'Nesher Mikan. So these are the 2 different interpretations of what Maasei Choshev and Maasei Rokem are. Then the Mishnah said that there were this tremendous amount of money and a tremendous amount of Kohanim that were involved in the Prochus. It says, Bishnon, Mishtayim, Ribo, Hoysonasis, Lechule. Either was 82 10,000s, which is 820,000 golden dinarim, or that it meant that there were 82 women involved, and then the Prochus was so large that it said the 300 Kohanim had to pick it up to be Tovalit. So Gemara says, Rav Yitzchak, Bar Bizna, B'shem Shmuel, says this is a Guzma. There are different ways to understand this. Some say that this only goes on the 300 Kohanim. The number 300 with Rav Shas is a number that's used for Guzma. But others say, no, this also goes on the 820,000 golden dinarim. That's a phenomenal sum of money. That was also an exaggeration. And both of these mean a lot. Taman Taninan, however, we learn in regards in the Mishnayis and Talmud, where it tells us that they had a lot of ash on top of the Mizbeach, after they had all the Korbanos and Lechags, it said they had a tapuach on the top of the Mizbeach, and it said, pa'omim, sometimes this tapuach, this mound or apple-like structure of ash, haya alea kishlosh meos kor, it had 300 kor, kor is 30 saw, so it was 300 times 30 saw, that's a huge amount of ash on top of the Mizbeach. Again, the key fact here is it says that it was a lashon of 300. And likewise over there, Rav Yosef ben Rabbi Bun, in the name of Shmuel, B'Shem Shmuel said that this was a guzma. Again, the number 300 means a large amount. It should not be taken literally, as in this case, 300 times 30 saw, which would be a huge amount. But it means that it means a huge amount, but lav dafka, as big as the numbers would suggest. So to over here, the number 300 doesn't mean that literally 300 Kohanim had to go and pick it up to be tovalit. It meant a large number of Kohanim had to pick it up to be tovalit. We're getting to the end of the parak, so this is a good break point for us to stop, because Chav Beis has a shorter Amud Beis, and therefore we'll have an easy time, Mitzvah Shem, finishing off the Masechta tomorrow. With this, we conclude today's shiur.